Hi everyone, and welcome to the Brexit podcast. I'm your host Jennifer Han, and the people facing the most uncertainty because of Brexit are perhaps the many millions of Europeans living in the UK and the British expats living in the EU. European leaders have thus far declined to guarantee the rights to residence, work, and healthcare of these individuals without first being informed about the terms under which the UK will be leaving the Union. The lobbying group 3 Million has also said that, as a result of Brexit, up to 1 million EU citizens could face deportation. To give us some insight on this topic, I chatted to Marie-Noëlle Leuve, who is a director of the civil rights organisation New Europeans, which advocates for European citizenship and the rights of EU citizens in the UK. She's also worked in European financial regulation for the last 5 years, so she has a lot of insight on political processes and opinions. We touch on a wide range of topics, from why there should be more of a European community spirit, and why her generation has taken the stability and peace it brings for granted. We also discuss why now is the time for immigrants in the UK to be loud and proud to defend their right to stay. Now, I want to apologise in advance because the audio is a little bit rocky in the first few minutes due to some technical difficulties. If it really bothers you, you can skip ahead to minute 6 and continue on from there. But I highly encourage you to stick out the little glitches for a bit because Marie has some very interesting things to say. As always, if you enjoy the show, please do feel free to rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice because that's how people find out about us and it really helps us out. You can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Marie Leuve, and you are director of the New Europeans. What exactly is the New Europeans? Enlighten me, please.
So New Europeans is a relatively small membership organization whose main purpose is to campaign for European citizenship rights. Before the vote on the 23rd of June, our main focus was really to establish the idea of European citizenship within the UK and really promote the idea of being more than just a citizen of a specific European country whilst being a real European citizen. Since the 23rd of June, our main purpose has become to European citizens living in the UK to ensure that if we stay in the country, if we can, that we don't become second-class citizens, and that we do not become a trading object in the negotiation.
Yeah. So what exactly does European citizen mean to you personally? What does that entail?
So to me personally, it means a shared thing of European common history and common values. But it also means acknowledgement that Europe has, that we have moved past the idea of nationalism and really the darkest part of nationalism. It means that it means an understanding that one nation doesn't define you, that there is a common heritage that is of the 20th century and grown on to live together in peace, prosperity, exchanging culture, exchanging, just becoming more than, for example, a British citizen or, in my case, French or German, so to really national identity.
And how do you see the state of that today? Like, how widespread do you think that kind of sentiment is of people identifying as European and being aware of the communal history? How would you estimate that?
So there's a huge difference, of course, on the continent and in the UK. I think for many people who were similar to me, born in the 80s, early 90s, we grew up with this on the continent. We really grew up with this idea of a common European identity, of the idea that you could be more than that Europe would work together. You know, of the idea that you could be more than just Spanish or just Slovakian or just Italian or just Polish. Just that you could really be more than that. But I think this idea has never really hit home in the UK. I arrived 10 years ago. First 5-6 years, whenever people refer to Europe, whenever I heard people referring to Europe, I would, as over there, I would always remind them that we are in Europe, that the UK was in Europe. When in politics people would refer to our relationship with Europe or the EU as our ally, I'd always remind them that, you know, the UK was part of the EU and that the UK was part of Europe. And it's been a very long battle, which I'm afraid I've lost. So I don't know. I think there are a lot of people here in the UK who feel very, very European, but they haven't been loud enough. Maybe because we've taken it for granted. I think that is true about most of our generation have taken Europe for granted. But I also think this notion of, I think basically the Eurosceptics have always been louder here, and it's almost not British to be really passionate about the European idea. So. I think the European idea would have needed a bit more passion here in Britain.
So where do you think that instinct comes from of people in the UK to sort of distance themselves from the rest of the EU? Is it just because they're physically, geographically quite distanced from the EU, or is it maybe because they were obviously this colonial power and there's still a lot of pride in the empire? Where do you think it stems from?
So I think this island mentality has not that much to do with it. I think there are both cultural and historical reasons. I think these days the fact that it's a couple of miles of water between the continent and Britain is not that important anymore. I think a lot of it is historical. And a lot of it has to do with the Second World War and what happened after it. Obviously, when the Second World War ended, the continent was lay in shatters, lay destroyed, and people were really looking for an answer for the future. They had learned the horrors of nationalism, and they were looking for an identity that would lend itself towards more common international cooperation. But in Britain, the Second World War ended, and Britain was, to a certain degree, still this empire, still this large empire, and of course, it had never been invaded. So whilst the rest of Europe was kind of reconstructing who it was, Britain kept calm and carried on, so to say. And I think a lot of Britishness has to do with this continuity and with this cultural continuity. But I also these days worry that it has a little bit to do with complacency. Because while the rest of Europe was kind of looking towards towards further European integration as a safeguard of democracy and as a safeguard of human rights and international cooperation and common culture, and as a safeguard against the terrors of nationalism, because fascism never really successfully made it to Britain, I sometimes do worry that the British think that they are almost immune to it, that they are immune to the terrors that fell over the rest of Europe in the 20th century, and. I think that hubris can be dangerous.
What was the thing that made you want to join the Europeans? Is it partly the fact, do you think, that you're obviously half German, half French, so you inevitably have this sort of dual identity, maybe? Was that a part of it?
So why I wanted to join the Europeans is because we are the only voice who's real in Britain, who is really standing up for European ideals, for the freedoms that come with Europe, for freedom of movement, for intercultural exchange, for belief in human rights, for what Europe can be, for the potential it has. Britain has often looked at Europe as only the single market. And of course, for the rest of the European Union, it is so much more. It is a union of values and common history and shared experiences and a European identity of citizenship rights. And the new Europeans are the only organization in the UK who stand up for that. So after 9 years of looking for that in the UK, the new Europeans and Roger Casali as the founder were a real breath of like fresh breath of European air, which attracted me to it. But yes, from a personal perspective, I have grown up with this European identity. Many people on the continent have, though. It's something we grow up with. I'd like to think because we learned from the errors of history. So having finally an organization in the UK that gets this, that feels the same way about Europe, is why I joined it.
You just mentioned that obviously you've been here for, did you say 9 years now?
I've been here for, it'll be 10 years in February.
Yeah, so what was it that made you want to stay despite this maybe anti-European sentiment?
So I think living in London makes a big difference. London is a very, very multicultural city. It is more than Europe even. It's global. And despite the anti-Europeanness of many British people, that is not something you really used to experience in London. That has changed. I'm sad to say that it is changing, but London to me was just always this city of all the opportunities, all the freedom, this celebration of life, the celebration of cultures, which I honestly just completely fell in love with when I first came here. So the fact that I might have to leave because of Brexit is very heartbreaking. I think I'm not the only European citizen who feels completely at home in London, for whom London is the place where we could have easily seen ourselves settle. And of course that has changed, and it's been very difficult.
I was going to actually ask about something you just mentioned. I was curious, living in London, whether you were exempt from a lot of this xenophobia, or at least like an aversion to foreigners living in the UK that's been so widely reported, or have you experienced it here as well?
So I personally have experienced very little of it. I have to say the conversations with people that I've known for a long time have changed. So I've been told a few months ago that my opinion on Brexit didn't matter because I didn't understand the British mindset. There has been a lot of, oh well, but now at least you get to go home comments, which, London is my home. Mm. And the whole idea of a European citizenship is that you can settle anywhere in Europe and make it your home. So I personally, apart from, you know, the odd trolling abuse on Twitter, have not received any abuse yet. But the tone with which people are talking to you, and I think to a certain degree not even realizing how their comments come across, has changed. There is definitely now a feeling of British and non-British people in London. And that was not there before.
And how did you experience the referendum day itself and the months since then? Were you very much instantly like, oh my God, am I going to be able to stay? What's going to happen to me? Or was it more?
So I have to say that I wasn't surprised. After 10 years of the living in the UK, after, I have to say, a Remain campaign that lacked a lot of enthusiasm and was mainly focused on the single market, after 10 years of vile, lying Eurosceptic press, I wasn't surprised. I think all pro-Europeans need to realise that we would have had to be a lot louder, but there we are. The referendum day itself, I went to work I went campaigning in the evening, I went door knocking, and then I stayed up till about 3-4 in the morning. I went to bed knowing that we had Brexited. I slept a couple of hours, went up the next day. I think I started crying around 11 when it finally hit, like when reality almost hit. I think every single person at my work who was a European citizen did the same that day. And there's been just a lot of uncertainty since then. I mean, I think the first gut instinct reaction for most people is, well, okay, I have to leave now. But of course, as I said earlier, London is my home. And it's difficult to... It's just difficult. It's not easy to accept. It feels very personal. It feels like a vote against people like me. And of course, I don't want to stay anywhere where I'm no longer welcome. But then London isn't really like that. And I love Britain. I mean, I love British humor. I love the ability to just genuinely do keep calm and carry on with everything. This notion of understatement, pie, I really love pie. So it is difficult because it is, it has become my home. 10 years is a long time. It has become my home, but it now feels like my home doesn't want me anymore. So I don't know is the short answer. If hard Brexit happens, a lot of jobs will go. I've been working in European policymaking for the last 10 years, so I might have to leave. Of course, we don't know whether we'll be grandfathered, whether we'll be allowed to stay. It's there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment, a lot of uncertainty.
But if you had the choice, would you want to stay in the UK, do you think?
I can't say that at the moment. I find that really difficult. Part of me really wants to stay because, as I said, I've made this my home. But it depends on the mood in this country. If this xenophobic trend that we have been seeing is growing, then no, I don't want to stay.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I think if things continue as they have been over the last year, I'll be one of, I think, a third of European citizens who will be looking to leave within the next 2 to 5 years. Yeah.
Mm. Speaking, obviously, of this uncertainty, I think Merkel has recently declined Theresa May's request to guarantee the rights of people, you know, their rights to residence and work and healthcare in the UK and also for Europeans.
She hasn't actually done that. That was misreported. What she said is, I'm not agreeing on anything before negotiations have been triggered, which is a constant response since the referendum. So I think this is a wonderful example of how news stories are being reported differently in different countries. What her constant point has been, she has not said, I'm not guaranteeing human rights for, or you know, the right to remain for British citizens whatsoever. She just has explicitly said, I'm not agreeing to anything, I'm not making any deals before negotiations start. Would I have liked her to agree to basic rights for everybody? Yes, absolutely. Mm. Would I have liked her to ensure that European citizens aren't a pawn in the negotiations? Yes, absolutely. But ultimately, I can also understand why she wouldn't change her position that no deals are being made before Article 50 is being triggered. I think a lot of the continent has been, of European continental leaders have been very clear that Brexit actually means Brexit, as in hard Brexit, and that negotiations will start when Article 50 is being triggered. And I think it would be good for the UK government to understand that that is also actually what they mean.
So if you, obviously people are very hesitant to speculate when it comes to this kind of thing, but if I were to ask you for your opinion, not for a prediction or anything, on which side of the fence it's going to fall, of whether people are going to be allowed to remain or whether there's going to be sort of a mass deportation even, where would you... Would you be able to give any sort of indication of that, or do you not? Would you not?
I mean, I'm guessing. Yeah, I don't think there will be a mass deportation. I mean, that is frankly, I can see why people are really worried about it. I'm really worried about it. But I don't think physical deportations would actually happen. I think the bigger exodus will be that jobs will go, that the industry will leave, and that the culture will change, and that people will... I think people will leave or will be made to leave because of economic and cultural circumstances, not because there is actually going to be people knocking on their doors asking them to pack their bags.
Oh, okay. So you think even if people got the right to remain, but the culture here changed to be quite unfriendly towards European nationals and that jobs weren't given to them as easily, people would leave sort of their own accord?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm quite interested, actually, in an article of yours that I read. You referred to Schrödinger's immigrant. I found that really interesting. Could you explain what you mean by that?
So Schrödinger's immigrant is the Schrödinger's immigrant is the immigrant who steals your job while simultaneously claiming unemployment benefits. So it's basically it's saying the immigrant that people are afraid of that is often depicted by the Murdoch press really doesn't exist. People are afraid of this image of this immigrant who invades and takes away our jobs and changes the culture and all of that. And that's a myth. I think that the immigrant that people are afraid of is largely a myth. And there were a lot of comments. As I mentioned earlier, that I thought that this vote against freedom of movement, against immigration, felt quite personally. That it was very personal. And I mean, there are a lot of people who keep on telling me, oh, but it's not you, we don't mean people like you. But ultimately they do, because the people they mean, the Schrödinger's immigrants, doesn't exist.
Mm. Mm. So why do you think people choose to believe in it? Or do you think they are sort of inclined to believe in it by the way things like this are reported? Or
I don't know is the honest answer. I think this fear of the unknown, this fear of the stranger, is a well-known sociological concept. I think there's a lot of economic uncertainty around. And in times of economic uncertainty, it's always easier to find a culprit and a scapegoat. And making immigrants scapegoats is, it's a tale as old as time. I don't know if this is ever going to change. I think people can choose not to believe in it, but then they would have to be conscious that they are choosing to believe in it. So it's a bit of a chicken and an egg situation. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, this is going to be a bit like asking you to find a solution to world peace, but what do you think is sort of, what can be done to counteract that kind of thinking? Do you think there's anything really, or?
I don't know. I mean, that is a bit like a solution to world peace. So I think scapegoating must stop immediately. I think immigration can be managed. And I think that it's absolutely true that we need to talk about immigration. But we need to move away from talking about immigration in a way that it is somehow a threat to the economy, but talk about it in a way that shows the incredible contribution that immigrants make to each society. From a labor market perspective, I think we need to approach it in a way where salary dumping or wage dumping is no longer possible. So employers need to be held responsible for paying immigrants the same wage as they would pay non-immigrant workers. I don't think there is one overall solution where you do this. I also do think that every immigrant has a responsibility to integrate into society. So I do think that when you come into a country, you need to make an effort to connect with the people around you, to speak a bit of the language, at least, to find a job, to contribute. So I think the responsibility is with the immigrants as well as with the host nation. But I think one thing to me is very, very clear, that you do not leave as an immigrant, you do not leave your home country, you do not leave your family, your support system, just to go into another country and claim benefits there. It's difficult. It comes with a lot of challenges. It comes with a lot of rewards, but it's difficult. And you do not do that just to sit around, live off benefits, or somehow be a scrounger to society. And you find a bad bag everywhere, but that is not what you do as an immigrant. That's not what immigrants do.
If you were able to sort of say something to the Europeans living in the UK at the moment who might be feeling disconcerted by this whole situation or feeling uneasy, what would it be?
You're not alone, and don't give up.
Keep calm and carry on.
Yes, but don't keep calm. Be loud. Join your Europeans. Make your voice heard. Make your concerns heard. Make your love for Europe heard. Don't give up. Now is not the time for progressive people, for people who live in Europe, who believe in Europe, to hide, to stay on their couch, to close their eyes and hope to wake up and it's all gone. This is not the time to do this. My generations, we have inherited Europe. We have inherited peace and cooperation from our parents, from our grandparents, and I think we are all a little bit guilty of having taken it for granted. And it is now up to us to defend it. It is now up to us to make sure that the generation after us, and hopefully even the generation after that, will still get to enjoy free movement, will still get to enjoy European cooperation. And Europe is in trouble. The idea of Europe is in trouble all over Europe. And I think that is because so many of us have taken it for granted. So I guess to sum it up, don't stay at home, get out there, fight for Europe, fight for what you've inherited, fight for European rights, and you're not alone. There are many of us who feel the same way.
Wow, that was a movie-worthy speech. I think I might have to edit in dramatic swelling music in the background. Okay.
It's heartfelt.
Yeah, I can imagine. And if people want to get involved in New Europeans, how can they do that?
Join our website. Go to our website, www.neweuropeans.org. There is a volunteer button. There's a link which you can click on. And someone will get in touch. Come to one of our events. There are a lot of events on our website as well. Just reach out. Reach out to any of us. Reach out to Roger. Reach out to me. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Come to our events. Join our website. Sign up. Volunteer.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.